Hi everyone and welcome to There's a Workshop for That. I'm Nati Revez, your host and the founder of La Workshoppers. If you are as passionate as I am in the power of facilitation, you are in the right place. On this podcast, experts in the field join me to share their experiences, insights, and practical tips. So whether you're a seasoned facilitator or simply curious about how well-designed and facilitated workshops can transform teams and organizations, this podcast is for you. Be sure to subscribe so you don't miss any episode. And if you like what you hear, please give it a 5-star on your podcast app. So now sit back, relax, and let's dive into today's topic and meet our guest. Let's go. Hello out there, it's Nati, and today I'm thrilled to welcome a very special guest to the podcast because she is my first guest from Argentina, Daniela Ruiz. She's not only a talented workshop facilitator, but also a creative coach who brings a unique blend of artistry and innovation to her sessions. I'm particularly excited to have her on the show because she's someone who, even before we connected personally, recommended me to one of my very first mentees. So shout out to Hailin, if you're listening. I'd love to hear how life is treating you in Berlin in the meantime. And Daniela, we share a lot in common, especially that artistic and performer gene that undeniably shapes the way we facilitate our sessions. So I'd love to dive about this topic today. And since we are 15,000 kilometers apart, yes, I Googled it just before, and I've never had the chance to visit your beautiful country or Latin America, I'm eager to learn more about what it's like to be a facilitator in Argentina. Hi, Daniela.
Hello, Nati. I am so excited to be here. La Workshopeuse. Mom, I made it.
Never mind. My mom doesn't speak English. She won't get it.
This is actually a French-English word, and it's always very funny to hear how people are pronunciate La Workshoppeuse. Try again.
La Workshoppeuse.
Yeah, it was better. How are you doing?
Doing well. Thank you for having me. I'm so excited to be here.
So, Daniela, we have two main topics today.
All right.
Before we start to deepen the subjects, I would like to hear what is your background and how did you came into facilitation?
Oh, how long is this? My goodness. Do you have 2 hours?
No, just kidding. Yeah, my background is very non-linear, I would say. And because of that, some people call it being a multi-potentialite, where you have many interests and many different talents that you explore normally throughout your life, but also at the same time. And so this has kind of shaped my life and my career. And also the other thing that has shaped my career is that I moved countries. From a very young age, I had this dream of like living in different cultures and interacting with different cultures. So I'm originally from Buenos Aires, Argentina, born and raised. And then as soon as I could, I moved to Europe and I lived in Madrid for a while. So that was like one chapter of my life. You know, I was young and single and I just started in the professional world. And when I was there, I did all kinds of different jobs, but then I ended up working in a corporate environment, in a big international headhunter. And so that's when I became interested in the corporate world. Then I went to work on a cruise ship because why not, right?
This dream, this is cool.
This dream of being an artist was always there. So I always had like my 9-to-5 job and then my artistic life, which would happen normally in the evenings. And so then I went to work on the cruise ship. And then when I was working on the cruise ship, I met the person who was then going to be my husband, and he was from the US. So I ended up moving to the U, getting married and moving to the US. And I lived in Austin, Texas for 8 years. So again, it was like immigrating again, getting used to another culture, starting over. And so in those processes, I would just take whatever jobs I could, essentially. And then I became a mother, and then that also shaped the types of jobs that I was willing to do or accept or even create. And then when my kids were a little bit, they were still kids, but I decided I wanted to raise them in Argentina. So 7 years ago, today, to this date, I moved back to Argentina. And so again, another migration, another starting over. When I did that was when I joined the world of tech. I didn't even know I was doing that. It was just something that kind of happened, because I remember when I came here, people would ask me, okay, what kind of job are you looking for? And that was such a hard question for me to answer, because I had done so many things in so many different industries that it was always very hard for me to define myself and say, this is what I am, this is what I do. I've always done all kinds of different things. And as I said, at the same time, I had my artistic life like on the side. Then when the pandemic hit, I was working at a tech company, a visual collaboration board. I was teaching people how to use this. And before I knew it, I was, part of my job was facilitating online. And I realized that this was something I had done previously in person. I had done workshops. I had created curriculums. I had, created train the trainer programs. I just didn't know that was facilitation. It wasn't called that at the time, you know, when I was doing it. But then when I look back and I kind of connect the dots, I had been doing it for a while. And now I was learning to do it online as well. And I found that when I'm facilitating, I can finally kind of merge all the skills learned from all those different experiences in the professional world, all the different hats that I wore, plus all of my artistic experience. It also comes in so, so handy. So I could finally be myself at doing something that had an impact, and it was a positive one. And so it wasn't until like 2021 or so that I realized, hold on, this is actually something. This is a career. I could be this, not just do it as part of another job. And this is how I came into facilitation. It was kind of an unfolding. It's not something that I searched for, but it kind of fell on my lap in that way.
This is so funny, because we have so much also in the milestones now, I realize, because this is in 2021, that I decided also to make the things I love the most, this facilitation work. So we have really a lot in common. And I would like to deepen the fact that being a performer or having a kind of artistic part of yourself, you are a singer, you are an actor, you are a stand-up comedian. I've been on stage for 15 years, almost every two weekends with my band. And I would like to deepen, how do you think this artistic background shapes your facilitation skills?
Well, I know that they say that to be a facilitator, you don't have to be the hero, you have to be the guide, which is true. However, you still need to command the attention in a way. You have to be able to, and also to get people on board, whatever it is that you're coming in with and that you're proposing. And I enjoy
that attention. Like, I know how to do it. I this is true. You have to be in front of a room. It doesn't matter who's there, if it's CEOs or C-level executives or whomever. And so it takes a certain kind of person to be able to stand in front of that room. Some people get really nervous before facilitating. And to me, this is thrilling. You know, this is something I really enjoy. It lights me up.
Yeah.
And so that's one thing, commanding the attention and do it in a way that that feels natural and comfortable for all parties involved. You know, that certain charm that you may have when you're commanding that attention. And then also, I think one very important skill is the ability to read the room. As a comedian, I have to do that all the time and understand if a joke is landing or not, or if I need to pivot and try something different, which is the same that I get to do in workshops, right? You have an idea, you have a plan of these are the activities that we're going to do, but then you have to be really in the moment to see how that's landing or not and be able to pivot if needed. And that... also, that ability to improvise and kind of change something on the spot and go with the flow and try something different, I think that also comes from my theater background. So I would say those are the most important skills that I can pinpoint. I know there are many others kind of embedded that I take for granted because they feel natural to me. And in my particular case, I also try to always bring humor. It's not that I try to, like, I cannot help it. This is something that I do not, this is how I communicate. And I believe humor to be really important because it helps alleviate some of the tension, like release some of that tension, bring some levity and some fun into the hard topics that we are dealing with sometimes in workshops. You know, as a facilitator, you are letting things emerge and people to put things on the table that maybe they don't do on a daily basis, the pain points, the things that are not working. And so it can be really tense at times. So having that skill of humor to bring in as well and to bring some levity and some fun into those conversations, I think really helps the flow of the workshops.
Yeah. It don't mean you need to have humor or you need to be a performer to be a facilitator. But when you have it, this is a part of your facilitation style, right?
Correct. Yes.
Because I think we have a similar facilitation style. I'm using also the things that I've learned on stage. For example, to start strong, to have a certain rhythm during a concert or during a session to end stronger. And also this thing with humor. I can remember in a session last year where I was meeting some leaders and I knew there are high tension in this room because they talked about turnover just a few minutes before my session was starting. And I also start my first question was if anybody is allergic to pink. And this is something that stayed in my head because they really laugh about it. And with this kind of questions, and I was in pink, of course, you can let them breathe out. Okay, yes. We change the mindset.
Mm-hmm. And when, you know, and when you laugh, you release endorphins and your brain is in a much better place to be creative and to be innovative. You cannot expect people to innovate if they're stressed out. So this ability to relax and also to build a relationship with you, to build rapport, you know, to feel that confidence that you know what you're doing, that this is a safe space. Is very important for things to actually happen during the workshop.
Yeah, I would love to see you facilitate because maybe I could see, you know, sometimes you don't see yourself.
Yes.
The presence that you have or not. And true. Yeah. Hey guys, if you are someone regularly running remote sessions, recording video courses, or hosting webinars, this might be interesting for you. I'm excited to share that I'll be joining Said Salouk's Facilitators Virtual Facilitation Masterclass, a 5-week journey to mastering essential tools and techniques that will turn your remote sessions into dynamic and immersive experiences. My personal goal is to master OBS and also Stream Deck. OBS because this is a free tool and I would love to replace some of the paid tools I currently rely on. And I'm also recording video courses for facilitators, but also for my corporate clients that I would like to make more professional. If this sounds interesting to you, check out Said Salouk homepage and consider joining. It starts next week on the 26th or 29th of August, depending on your time zone. So make sure to secure your seat and maybe we'll see us there. One thing's for sure, it's going to be a lot of fun while we are learning. So, you are living in Argentina.
Yes.
Far away from here. I mean, It's 8 o'clock in the evening for me. What time is it in your time zone?
9 a.m.
In the morning.
In the morning.
So, yeah. And I'm not such in connection with facilitators from this part of the planet. Mm-hmm. Even if I know that I have, for some reason, a lot of listeners in Latin America. Nice. So I would like to hear from you. Are there strong communities of facilitators in Argentina, or how do you and your peers connect and support each other locally?
This is great. This was actually one of the things that made me want to be a part of this world. The way I became connected with some facilitators in the area was through Agile. So Agile practitioners have a really strong community here. There's actually an event that happens every year that's called Agile Open Camp. Mm-hmm. And it started here in Argentina, in Patagonia, Bariloche, a beautiful, beautiful place. And so all the Agile practitioners from all of Latin America get together. And this is basically a big open space. So it's not a learning per se. It's not a training course or a program. It's more of a community sharing event. Mm-hmm. As I said, it's open space. So people propose what they want to share, and then you go to wherever talk or activity sessions. You want to go to.
Sessions.
Yep. And so I had heard about this back in 2017. I had a friend who went and who was involved in this community. And then it wasn't until last year that I actually went. I was like, okay, I need to see what this is about. And I went. And that's where I met lots of facilitators. And I could tell they're such a strong community. And what I loved about them, Nati, was that they really operate from a place of abundance and generosity. And there is no knowledge or anything that they would keep to themselves. It's all about sharing. And I thought that was so strong. And even the way they work, many of these people work together, they're partners. And even the way they get paid or they divide the income from a customer, you know, they do a feedback session where each one says, okay, I think for this project, I did this much and I think you did this much. So I think I deserve 65% and the other person, and they agree after the fact how much they're going to make. Because again, they're operating from a place of abundance. Like, we have work, we're going to continue to have work. I'm recognizing your work, what you did, what I brought to the table. I thought that was so different. It kind of blew my mind. I was like, I want to belong to this world where people work like this. You could tell like there's genuine affection and they care for each other and they look after each other and they learn from each other all the time. So I thought this was like, this is what I want to do. These are my people, the type of people I want to belong with, you know? And so in that Agile Open Camp, I, of course, it's about Agile methodologies. And so I was like, well, Agile is okay, but I just want to be a facilitator. I don't care if it's Agile or not Agile, you know? And so they told me, okay, you should go to one of the Art of Hosting gatherings. And so Art of Hosting is another community that has different events around the world. And they have a pretty strong community here in South America. And so there were different events throughout the year, and there was one that was back in September. And so I went to that one. And again, I met a community of such wonderful people. And it's crazy because you only spend like 2 or 3 days together, but the bonds that you create are so strong.
Yeah.
And these people are so inspiring. Like, it's hard to share, because I can't even say, anytime I need something, they are like my ChatGPT. You know, anytime I have a workshop and I have to think of an idea and I have a certain group, I go to this group and I'm like, hey, I'm facilitating for 12 people. And these are like, and so I give them the input, and then it's a bunch of information that they, you know, they send me like, try this, and I've tried this and it works for me, and why don't you try this other thing? Bunch of resources, and all about sharing and enriching each other, and as I said, just making lives better. So I actually went to this group to ask them about communities and learning programs in Latin America, because I really wanted to learn the skill of facilitation. And yeah. I couldn't really find a program here. So that's why I went to, when I asked about it, they told me, oh, go to Art of Hosting. But Art of Hosting, it's a beautiful event, and I recommend it to anyone who's listening. If you have one coming near you, go. But again, it's more of a community sharing event. It's not a training program.
Yeah, the most of the resources I know for myself, the courses or programs or retreats, they are based in Europe and US. So this was exactly my next question. How do you access such kind of courses? Do you go to America or sign for American online sources?
I'm glad you asked me that, because this is something I've been noticing and I'm concerned about or want to do something about, which is I ended up signing up for a course with AJ and Smart in Europe. And the other one I knew or I was aware of was with Voltage Control in
exactly.
The US.
Yeah.
So these were the two main programs that kept coming to me like, okay, this is where you can train as a facilitator. But most of the countries here in Latin America, our currencies are not so strong. So for me to be able to enroll in that course, it was an investment, like literally to make it clear, it was like 16 months of my rent to be able to afford this course, which is a crazy investment. I don't think I would have made it for anything else. And the only reason I could make it was because I was working for a US company. So I was getting paid in foreign currency and not in local currency. If I had a local job, I could never in my life afford a program like this. And so I think there is a thing there, you know, a lack of access to some some possibilities. And within that training course that I did, the Workshop or Master with AJ and Smart, we had a workshop with Jake Knapp for Design Sprint. And I remember very clearly the icebreaker that he did, because he put the world map on the screen and we had to put the stickies where we were joining from. And I was the only sticky in the entire global South, the only sticky. And that was mind-blowing to me. Like, this is so unfair, I feel very privileged to be here and to be accessing this, you know, information and this course for myself. But I also feel a responsibility, like I have to do something with it and share it with the community here as well. I would love to become like an ambassador, you know, for, I don't know, let's talk to AJ and Smart or even to Jake Knapp. But yeah, I feel like there's definitely a very big inequality there. And I follow many communities of facilitators and I see all the cool things happening in Europe, you know, and retreats and on conferences and like all the cool things, but we cannot access them. They're too expensive for us to even get ourselves to that part of the world is very pricey. And then on top of that, having to pay for these courses, as I said, with the currencies that we have in Latin America, this is nearly impossible.
Yeah. What do you think could be made there? Ooh. I mean, I know some people, for example, a visual facilitator, he's working for Bicablo and he's proposing, when he do a course, he's proposing several kind of prices depending on where you are from. I know that there is this difference because now I am in the other side in Asia, and I was talking with facilitators from Java, so Indonesia, mm-hmm. and they are also looking at all the videos available for free on YouTube from AJN Smart or other organizations because they absolutely cannot afford this kind of program. So this guy from Bicablo, he was proposing different prices. Is it one of the solutions or should we develop kind of agency everywhere in the world, depending that adapting to the side you are in the world?
This is a great question and I definitely don't have the solution. I think there are some initiatives that we could take as having a sliding scale, like you say, depending on where you're coming from. Another thing that at the time I proposed to AJ and Smart, but unfortunately they didn't go with my idea, was to let me do, because they claim that with your first customer, you're going to be able to pay for the course. And so I said, why don't we make an agreement where I can do the course for free? And with my first customer, I pay you the course in full. No promotions, nothing. So I end up paying more for the course as soon as I get my first customer. So that would be a way that they can make it accessible for people like me. And then also it's like a guarantee that it's going to work, that you're going to get that first customer and make that money that they're telling you you're going to make. I used to work for a bootcamp that had that business model where people mm-hmm. did not have to pay. And then when they got a job, they would start paying you back. And so that allowed people from developing countries to access this type of education. So I think that kind of model could work. And I'm not saying you have to sustain your business like that. You're still going to sustain your business with people from Europe, with people from the US or developed countries. But you could make it accessible for people in other parts of the world as well. I think that would be a great solution now that I'm saying it out loud.
I can see, of course, the difficulty when you're proposing coaching, a course or whatever. You are proposing and giving the keys to success, but you cannot be sure that the person who is taking your course will apply. So I can understand that it might be difficult since when you are giving a facilitation and a workshop, a master course, to be sure that the person will get the first client, because if she is or he is not doing the work, I try to have the other perspective, you know, to understand
why
they cannot. Because, for example, I'm mentoring a lot of people, but they need to do, I'm here as a guide also, and they need to find their own way.
They need to do their work.
I cannot guarantee, and I can guarantee that I give all the tools, but I cannot guarantee that the person will do the work. So I think I can understand it's difficult, but maybe
two things there. I'm not saying you as an independent, you know, facilitator trying to do your small business to do this, to have this type of model. I'm not saying that. I'm saying the big companies, you know, who are making thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars, who can afford to have a percentage of their student base be like this. If they're committed with the outcome and they're committed with the cause of making it accessible worldwide, then, you know, you could take it as a sunk cost, even if they didn't succeed, but you're invested in their success too, because you want to get paid. So you could also think about admissions and, you know, and make sure that you're admitting people into the program that, you know, have the skills they need to succeed later. So there are different things that you can do. Again, I'm not talking about the small business owner who's really counting on every dollar of every person that they help, but I'm talking about the larger programs or you know, training courses that could afford to have just a percentage of their student base be global.
Yeah. And does it make sense also to propose different kind of prices depending on the area you are?
It would. That's tricky though, you know, because how much you are willing to invest in your education is not only determined by where you live, but there are so many factors. We all want to pay as little as possible normally, you know, no matter where we live. So if you have that, of course it helps. But I think this other type of model could really help, or also train people and have them be ambassadors in different parts of the world. Where I could have my license to, like, a franchise type thing, to teach the AJN Smart course here locally in local currency, in the local language as well, in Spanish in this case. So I think there are things to be done. We just have to care, and people have to care to make this a worthy cause that you know, companies will be invested in. Maybe you can have companies like sponsor people.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm just thinking of myself. Of course, it's not the same. I'm a freelance, so it's different. But I know, for example, for myself, that if I have a workshop with a big corporate in Europe and a workshop in a corporate in Asia, in a country which has not a high currency, I will price definitely differently. So this is my way of working. Yeah. And how do you get clients? And through this course that you make, do you have better access to international customers?
That is the hope. This is why I enrolled in this program, because I wanted to access not only the training in itself, but more so the network. So connect with other, and I think it, in some ways it has paid off. I'm here with you today, and I think some of these things have had to do with me doing that course and connecting with people in the facilitator community, the international facilitation community. And so in that way, it has helped my personal brand, if you will, and my LinkedIn and whatever. So far, I haven't gotten any international customers or any clients. I haven't gone after them yet also, but it helps, but it's not a guarantee. I don't know if I have to answer that question. I cannot give you a recipe to get international clients. I use my LinkedIn a lot, and like, I post in English. I try to post about my work there, and I've had people reach out to me and tell me, like, if I had to facilitate a workshop, I would definitely come to you because, you know, you seem very professional and this and that and the other. But I haven't had actually a client reach out to me just yet.
Okay.
That's what I'm hoping for.
Yeah, continue on LinkedIn. From my experience, I'm very active on LinkedIn since 2 years. I'm teaching my student how to use LinkedIn because this is where I get my clients. And not only directly companies, but also people who recommend you.
Yeah.
So if people are aware about you, so LinkedIn is here to make people aware about you. They are not buying on LinkedIn, but they are getting aware. And then when you are a specialist or someone who is speaking English, speaking Spanish, or for myself, speaking French, German, and English, they get aware about you. So post the most you can. And
and also
join some other communities which are free. I mean, AJ and Smart has also a free community called Facilitator Club, and there is a lot of great exchange there. Better has a great free community. Session Lab has a great community. There are a lot of community where sometimes people also are talking about jobs.
I really believe in the power of networking.
Yeah.
And I did get a client that came through networking, someone I reached out to on LinkedIn because I really liked her profile. So I asked her for a Zoom call. We had a Zoom call. Then she said, oh, you should talk to my friend Carolina because she reminds me so much of her. So then 2 weeks later, I'm having coffee with someone here in Argentina. And mind you, this person that I spoke with, hi, Kavya, if you're listening, I found her in a Slack community, and then I went to her LinkedIn. I really liked her. For all I knew, she was someone from India. But then when we spoke, it turns out she was from India. She had been raised in Canada. At the time we spoke, she was living in Rome. And then she said, you should connect with my friend in Argentina. So I'm having coffee with someone in Buenos Aires. and then this person in Buenos Aires sent me one of her clients, which was great. And then I facilitated bilingually. So they had... in their company, they had people from England who didn't speak Spanish. They had people from here who didn't speak English. So that was very challenging. I had to facilitate a whole day session in both languages and kind of translate as we went. So I do believe in the power of networking, and I do that on LinkedIn. I'm not on LinkedIn selling services, or not yet, but I'm really there to connect with people. And this is why we're here, you know, and this is why I recommended Ashelin to go to you. So I think eventually that is how you get your international clients as well. But it comes from a place of, like, to me, at least, your personal brand or whatever you post on LinkedIn, it has to come from a place of that is authentic. That
Absolutely.
Is really who you are, Absolutely. What you're trying to put out there.
Yeah. And this is why you need to work before you set any profile on what do I want to do for who do I want to serve, and why me? And this is the key to position yourself and to attract people.
Yeah.
So, my dear Daniela, got your speaker badge a few days ago.
I did. So exciting.
Congratulations. What was the topic?
Thank you. Well, they actually, again, the power of networking, because someone from LinkedIn recommended me for that gig. So that was, again, LinkedIn working. They called me as a speaker. The person who recommended me is someone who does conferences about humor and using humor at work and the skill of humor and whatnot. So in this case, when the people from the conference came to me, they also wanted me to facilitate an activity because they knew I was a facilitator and a coach, and it was the last day of the conference, so it was something to kind of wrap things up. So I did a little bit of both. I did a talk about humor and why humor, why using humor. And then that was kind of the segue to facilitate an activity that invited people to use humor to gather their learnings from the conference. It was great. It was a blast.
This is something you really like, right?
Yes.
So,
can you tell?
So Argentina, if you need a speaker talking about collaboration, facilitation, humor, or... if you need a facilitator, contact Daniela
Ruiz. Not only Argentina, eh? I can travel. My passport is up to date. I have three passports, actually.
True. I had in mind your speak in front of an audience. This is why. But of course, if you need a great facilitator talking English and Spanish, having a huge experience to own the room and knowing how to capture an audience, contact Daniela. All the information are in the show notes. Thank you so much, Daniela.
It was Thank so you, nice. Nancy. That sounded like an infomercial at the end. Call now for a free session on agile methodologies.
Yeah. Maybe we should prepare something. Okay. People, maybe we will prepare something. An online session with two pink ladies. We will talk about it. And then we'll
do that.
Thank you so much, Daniela.
Thank you. Merci.
Bye-bye.
Bye, everyone.
Hope you enjoyed this episode with the great and amazing Daniela. It was a lot of insights. Don't hesitate to connect with her via her LinkedIn profile. I will write in the show notes. If you're interested to get your seat for the Facilitainer Virtual Facilitation Masterclass, which starts next week, link in the show notes also. And in the next episode, I welcome a friend of mine, Alexander Eisenstetter. We will talk about large group facilitations and the tools needed to be able to facilitate right this kind of workshops. Until then, I wish you good health, success, and lots of happiness. Au revoir.